when she was eight. Her mother died, and so she grew up in obviously a busy household with her father and her siblings. In 1901, when she was 16, she moved down to Old Saybrook to live with her older sister, Bertha, who had married a pharmacist, Peter Lane. And Peter Lane was the first African-American man in Connecticut licensed as a pharmacist. And so in Old Saybrook, Anna finished high school and then went on to attend the Brooklyn College of Pharmacy, the only woman and the only African-American in her class. And so she then became the first African-American woman licensed as a pharmacist in 1909. She worked for a few years in Hartford before joining her brother-in-law in 1911 in Old Saybrook. And interestingly, in 1917, during World War I, Peter took a job at the Sisson Drug Company, which is a wholesale firm in Hartford, and he turned the business over to Anna. And so she became the owner in 1922, changed the name to James Pharmacy. And she operated that pharmacy until 1967, when she retired at age 81.
Wow.
Where, by all accounts, she was really a fixture in town and really an institution all of herself. And this remarkable story does not end there, because Peter and Bertha Lane, they had lived above this pharmacy, as Anna would later, and they had a daughter, Anne, born in 1908, and Anne would grow up to attend UConn's College of Pharmacy and return to work for her aunt for a couple of years. But pharmacy was not to be her destiny. In 1938, she married George Petrie and moved to Harlem, and she became Anne Petrie the Novelist, the first African-American best-selling author for her debut novel, The Street.
So, Elizabeth, tell us about some of the other African-American women that are featured in the book.
Well, one of the things I like about the book and about the women that we'll talk about during the lecture are some are famous and some are kind of your every folk, I call them, like Anna Louise James. So we have individuals we'll talk about, including, you know, Marian Anderson, the celebrated opera singer, first African-American to perform at New York City's Metropolitan Opera in 1955. Of course, she was not from Connecticut. She was born in Philadelphia. But she and her husband bought a 100-acre farm in Danbury in 1940, the year after her famous concert on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial in Washington, D.C. Then we also have lesser-known people, but also very important, people like Susan Elizabeth Freeman. She was born and raised in Stratford, and she became a nurse during World War II in really what was the first wave of African-American women in the military and in the nursing corps there. So as the nation geared up for World War II, the National Association of Colored Graduate Nurses recommended that its members join the efforts of the American Red Cross, which was serving as a clearinghouse for the Army Nurses Corps. But at first, the Army rejected African-American nurses, and when they finally conceded, they ruled that they could only serve in segregated hospitals and health care units. In 1943, she served in North Africa, and upon her return to Camp Livingston, she was promoted to captain, and she saw the full integration of the camp there, and she received several honors. So at a time when fellow Connecticut residents Lemuel Custis and Connie Napier shattered the negative stereotypes about African-American military pilots as members of the famed Tuskegee Airmen, Freeman and her fellow nurses shattered the additional negative beliefs about African-American servicewomen. So it's a wonderful homegrown story.
Elizabeth, in many ways, African-American women, especially from the previous century and beyond that, had this double whammy against them. They were black and they were women. Does the reader and the listener to the lecture get a glimpse into how they managed to overcome and do something really above and beyond?
What I draw from these stories certainly is, it's both a sort of a personal and a little bit of a universal maybe quality of women who were, you know, personally very strong, very focused, very directed. What you sometimes, I think, lose in history is really knowing the person and their personality. And I always think these women must have also had, you know, particularly adept personalities at dealing with grace and dignity but resolve and strength with what they must have encountered. I think those are the things as a reader that you read for and garner kind of for yourself and try to draw from.
Elizabeth Norman, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.